From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on December 13th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. Ooh, it's Friday the 13th. I didn't even think about that. Thank you. Is it a full moon? Probably. Oh, gosh. What is it going to be? Spring. On this episode of The Lead, we look at why the federal government is suing South Carolina. Myon Schechter tells us of two South Carolinians among the 39 folks that President Joe Biden pardoned, along with nearly 1,500 people whose prison sentences were reduced. We also stay in Washington, where Senator Lindsey Graham is gearing up to tackle illegal immigration next year. And state Senate Republicans are all gas and no brakes on a third attempt at a school voucher law. Also in this podcast, the House Freedom Caucus suspends one of its own. All right, y'all, it is a December to remember. We're celebrating the Honda days here, the ultimate driving machine BMW holiday season. Jaguar, I don't think even makes cars anymore. Regardless, we want to know what is hot and what is not hot for 2025. We will have a dedicated wind down to this next week. We need your input here. We're dying for some outside input. Tell us what's going to be in for 2025. We need to start shopping now. We got some hot takes that will be coming at you. We'll have some guests on talking about it too, but we need to know what you think. 803-563-7169. It's going to be all AT and maybe some of my comments, but it's going to be pretty much him unless you guys call. Do you want him to control your 2025? You can fix that now. 803-563-7169. And thank you. The federal government sued South Carolina on Monday over its handling of adults with disabilities, claiming that the state violates the Americans with Disabilities Act by opting, through money and policy decisions, to leave people with mental illnesses in group homes where they can't choose what to eat, pick their own roommate, find a way to work at a job, or go to church and other activities, this according to the Associated Press. The state has known about the issues since a different 2016 lawsuit, and federal officials warned them of the problems and possible legal action in a 23-page report in May 2023, the U.S. Justice Department's lawyers said in court papers. While Governor Henry McMaster questioned the timing of the lawsuit, because it's coming in the final weeks of Democratic President Joe Biden's administration, he is working on solutions to the problems brought up in this suit, according to his office. The Associated Press says that one proposal is to combine the State Department of Mental Health and the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs and put the new agency in the governor's cabinet under his supervision. That's called oversight, folks. Speaking of the feds, let's scoot up to Washington for a quick moment. In the remaining weeks of his presidency, President Joe Biden on Thursday reduced the prison sentences of 1,499 people and approved 39 pardons. Two South Carolina women are on the president's pardon recipient list. South Carolina Public Radio's Myon Schechter has this brief report.
The White House says Gaffney's Danita Nicole Parker and Columbia's Shantae Dorothea Williams were convicted of nonviolent offenses in their 20s. They're now in their 40s, and the White House says both have turned their lives around. Parker is a mom of two who delivers meals and runs a program feeding families with her husband. Williams is employed, works in her church's food pantry, and is a greeter on Sundays. The two women were part of the largest single-day act of clemency in modern history. Biden says he intends to take more clemency steps in the weeks ahead.
Thanks, Myon. Sticking in Washington, Senator Lindsey Graham spoke about his plan to fix illegal immigration before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Tuesday. Graham plans to hit the ground running in January, come the start of the Trump administration, when he will also be head of the Budget Committee in what will be the Republican-controlled Senate. But on December 10th, he was just the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, where he said he'd be using the complex budget reconciliation process to force changes with a simple majority instead of the usual 60 votes needed. Here's Graham.
Allow people to come in our country who are convicted felons to do damage to families we'll hear from today. That nightmare is coming to a close. In January of 2025, the Republican Senate will make its top priority a transformational border security bill that will be taken up and passed by Budget Committee, increasing the number of bed spaces available to detain people instead of releasing them, increasing the number of ICE agents to deal with people who should be deported, finish the wall, and put technology on the border so we'll have operational control of the border. That's going to be our top priority. So if you're here illegally, get ready to leave. If you're a criminal, we're coming after you first. If you've been paroled illegally, we're not going to give you the roots to attach yourself to our country because you should not have been here in the first place. As to the Dreamers, hopefully we can find a solution to that problem. What I want to do is regain control of a broken border really quickly. And to my Democratic friends, I think if you resist rational deportation policy, you do so at your own peril.
Carrying out the deportations of 1 million people a year would cost about $88 billion. That's 88 billion B. For arrest, detention, and removal, according to the pro-immigration think tank American Immigration Council. There are about 13 million people living in the country illegally. There are also about 500,000 people in the Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program who arrived here as children without authorization. DACA recipients are able to obtain work permits, I actually know a few, but a federal judge on Monday just blocked the Biden administration's rule to allow them access to health care under the Affordable Care Act. Back in Colombia, the Senate Education Committee is proposing to use state lottery dollars in the budget for private school tuition scholarships to get around the Constitution's prohibition on spending tax dollars on private education costs. The Russ McKinney was reporting on this hearing and spoke with Senate Education Committee Chairman Greg Hembree, along with other reporters, after that hearing.
We have a lot of programs that, as you heard, I mean, there are a lot of programs that are funded out of lottery funds and that are that could be paid for out of general fund money. So what you're really just seeing a shift in, you know, you're moving this expense to the general fund to leave capacity in the lottery fund to be used for this program.
You have a supermajority in both houses of the legislature. Why not just do a constitutional amendment and let the people speak to them?
Yeah, I think that that's probably the right answer as well. I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both. The Blaine Amendment's something that's left over. It was intentionally a discriminatory constitutional amendment when it was crafted to discriminate against Catholics. I mean, that's what it was all about. And, you know, leaving around this sort of leftover, you know, kind of junk from an age of discrimination, I think is a bad idea anyway. But I think we can act more quickly on this. I believe we can get this in place. And I've talked about the urgency when we have students that are, you know, in schools right now that don't know where they're going to end up. And so I think our urgency is to address that first and then swing back around, at, you know, kind of in the cool of the day and deal with the Blaine Amendment.
You hear Hembree mentioning the Blaine Amendment. So let's rewind to September when the state Supreme Court ruled 3-2 on the last voucher law known as the Education Scholarship Trust Fund. The opinion focused on what's known as the Blaine Amendment, which is the state's constitutional ban on using taxpayer dollars for the, quote, direct benefit of private educational institutions, quote. So it doesn't just cover religious, but also private educational institutions. Very broad there. And Senate lawmakers are rearing to go. Okay. An education subcommittee will meet on January 8th at 10 a.m., and then the full Senate Education Committee will take up the measure shortly thereafter at noon. We're talking about this bill that'll be moving through really quick, and that will get it right on the calendar once senators return on January 14th. Here's Hembree again.
It's the first priority for the Senate Republican caucus. I mean, I can say that. I've already touched on the urgency, but we've also vetted it. I mean, this is not something that's brand new stuff. Now, this has got brand new elements to it, no doubt. But as far as the general structure of the bill, you know, it's been debated. So I do think it'll take some time. We've got a lot of new senators. You know, they did not have the benefit of having lived through those debates and hearing those arguments. So, you know, this is going to take us a little time to get them up to speed. But otherwise, I think it'll move pretty quickly.
Now, just a little note for you. The state Supreme Court also ruled 4 years ago that Governor McMaster could not send $32 million in federal COVID money to pay for one-time tuition grants for some 5,000 K-12 students to attend private school in the state. So the third time?
Three.
Over in the House, the state newspaper reports that Lexington Republican and House Freedom Caucus Vice Chairman R.J. May is out of the exclusive, invitation-only far-right group, the House Freedom Caucus. In fact, that group's current chairman, Representative Jordan Pace of Goose Creek, said May has been suspended for quite some time. Federal agents searched May's home on August 5th, seizing a computer, thumb drives, a tablet, 4 cell phones, hard drives, and more. In an October filing, the U.S. Attorney's Office said a criminal indictment was expected within 3 months. The state reports that Pace declined to say why May was suspended. May was in the chamber during the December 3rd House organizational session, so we'll be keeping an eye on that as it's almost been 3 months. Moving on, the economic outlook for South Carolina in 2025 is good.
Wow.
Not just my opinion. This is according to economists with the Darlamore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. I first want to start with some remarks made by Dr. Douglas Woodward, who is an economics professor and also director of the Division of Research at the school. Woodward discussed the role the economy played in the election, and I know you probably know this, but take a listen.
This election year, which was just a stunning year with so many things happening all the time, so many stories, sometimes the stories about the economy got buried a little bit, even though that was the major issue. As you can see, that's what the voters really care about more than anything else. I think that we learned again. We learn this every 4 years, but voters do care about the economy. They care about inflation. They care about unemployment. And they care about overall economic development, and that's what was addressed in the election this year. The big long-term issue is we're in for a big change here. I mean, this is a new era. The era of globalization is over. I think that's something we can pretty much confirm is one of the key takeaways from the Trump presidency, because he ran explicitly against globalization towards policy of protectionism, the likes we haven't seen since 2016, when he was president last time. But it looks like he's going to ramp it up even more. And so this is a new era. I call it the era of localization, which in many respects, this is good for South Carolina, because the focus of the Trump administration has been on manufacturing. That was their theme. And we're a manufacturing state, and that's been our economic development strategy. So this aligns with everything we've been doing for decades. If any state can take advantage of these policies, it ought to be ours. I'm not saying they work out perfectly, but tariffs are designed to redirect economic activity back into the United States, along with favorable tax policies that Trump is announcing. So we're going to see more investment coming. And I think we're in a good position competitively, South Carolina, to attract this investment.
Again, I know we've talked about the economy and the election to death, but think about it. It's just been a month since the election, so we can keep talking about it a little bit. I mean, my gosh, we talked about what was going to happen on Election Day for years. It happened. We can still talk about the election. Now, one of our regular voices on the South Carolina economy is research economist Dr. Joey Von Nessen, who also spoke at the press event before the conference and gave more of an overview of a state's economy.
South Carolina's economy remains in good shape in 2024 overall and as we head into the new year. If we were to give the economy a grade, I think that we could assign it a grade of B+, meaning that by most metrics, we continue to see a very resilient and healthy economy, strong consumer spending, stable rates of economic growth, historically low unemployment in South Carolina, and very strong wage gains overall that have persisted throughout 2024. But even with this strong economic performance that we've seen, we're still in recovery mode in South Carolina. And that's because to fully recover from any recession, like the COVID recession in 2020, we have to recover not just all the lost jobs that we experienced, but also all of the lost purchasing power that South Carolinians and that Americans lost over the last several years. And it's on this second piece where we have not seen that recovery yet. Americans, on average, consumers are still worse off today than they were on the eve of the pandemic when we look and compare their level of purchasing power. And this is largely why we saw voters this year consistently ranking the economy as a top concern when they went into the voting booth and in terms of their overall priorities and concerns, and it's why consumer sentiment remains well below pre-pandemic levels. And this extended loss in purchasing power is effectively the trade-off that we made in exchange for faster employment recovery. If we compare this recovery to what we saw following the Great Recession in 2008, remember it took us almost 7 years to fully recover all the lost jobs from 2008, compared to just 2 years following the 2020 recession. So a very, very big difference there. And that was despite the fact that the COVID recession saw far more losses in South Carolina in terms of job loss. We lost about 15% of our employment base in 2020, compared to just about 8% in 2008. But nevertheless, we saw a much faster recovery period. And that trade-off was higher inflation that resulted in part from $6 trillion in stimulus and fiscal stimulus that led to very high levels of demand, along with that accompanying loss in purchasing power that we never experienced following the 2008 recession. Price levels remained very stable in the aftermath of the Great Recession in 2008. So we effectively accepted an economy that ran too hot with rising prices as that trade-off for a faster employment recovery. But the good news is that we are on the cusp of a new era in South Carolina as we head into 2025. We're rapidly cooling off from our multi-year pandemic bubble, where much of the growth that we've seen has been unsustainably high because it's been driven in part by these stimulus dollars. And we're moving from that pandemic bubble to more sustainable growth rates in the new year, in 2025.
Now, I'm going to give you my full interview with Joey in next Saturday's Econ Podcast.
Econ Pod.
That's right, Econ Pod. We're going to go all in on that.
Econ Pod.
If my producer could help me. Yeah. It's happening again.
Malfunction.
I thought we had this fixed last time.
Does not compute.
We'll have it fixed by next Saturday, folks, I promise.
Malfunction.
It's gonna be fixed.
Econ Pod.
Okay, well, as AT gets to work on the Econ Pod and the bots that control us, let's wrap up with some news that Boeing will be expanding its North Charleston operations to the tune of $1 billion. And infrastructure upgrades that will create 500 new jobs over the next 5 years. Boeing South Carolina is the exclusive home of the 787 Dreamliner production line and its three models.
Three.
Boeing has been in the state since 2009, and this announcement comes amid turmoil for the aerospace giant that has faced financial headwinds from issues stemming from its 737 MAX program, a recent 7-week machinist strike, and starts and stops over problems with the 787 line over the years. As a result, the company is shedding 10% of its workforce, some 17,000 people worldwide, including 220 jobs in North Charleston next month. Now, the billion-dollar investment will help ramp up production of the twin-aisle jet to 10 per month by 2026, compared to 5 per month, as the company faces a backlog of 785 planes per the company. Not a new model. That's how many planes they got to build. Get back to work. Lead says get to work, Boeing. Yeah, come on, don't. Listen, we have our own problems here. Guys, it's getting old too, okay? Welcome to the wind down section. Our little break from the news. A.T. Shire, lead producer, is here with me, standing by.
Also, podcast machinist, I guess.
Yeah. You were briefly on strike, though, as part of your own machinist union.
I'm that little squeaky voice, yeah.
That is me. I'm the squeaky voice.
But I don't know what's going on with this machine. And I got to tighten it up on my end.
We just upgraded.
It's all metric.
Why do they have different batteries?
I promise I will have it ready for Saturday, and then this joke will end. Gavin, speaking of little breaks, you took a big old break last night and did something. You're doing a lot. You're doing a lot of crossing out on a list, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will say that my event last night was not something that was on my list, but I went to...
Not until you did it and then realized it was actually on the list.
I went back through all my notes over the years and I realized that Trans-Siberian Orchestra was on my list of things to do.
Yep.
I got to see them at Colonial Life Arena here in Columbia.
Yeah.
This is after I spent last Giving Tuesday repping and asking y'all to help donate and you know, get those tickets. And, you know, as a result, we were awarded
some
of them. Had some extras. So we went. I didn't know what to expect. Everyone knows like their classic hits.
This was your first heavy metal concert.
Totally.
And I'm putting huge sarcastic quotes over heavy metal there.
Yeah, because I've seen Kiss.
You're going to get me started on Kiss here. Okay, so Kiss is a band that sells itself as the most evil thing in the world. And all the songs are about like, la, 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 hold your hands. You know, like it's so lame.
I've never really seen one. And it was wild because then it's also like, Rage Into Christmas, you know, Santa metal band, but it's for the baby Jesus. And you're like, okay. And like lasers and everyone's jumping around and there's a crazy violinist and now, there's you're double pianos.
You're telling me that there's a storyline to this.
Now there is a storyline to it. This is Lost Christmas.
This is blowing my mind.
And it's like, and AI was a part of this too. Like in like their set is digital, right? So it's huge, but like it's a big screen in the background. It's very cool. They do a good job. They have to. They're in so many different cities all over all the time. But there's this storyline about this little girl who's wearing a Russian-style coat. They kept saying it that way. I'm like, why does that matter?
Yeah.
There's a narrator that will come out between sets.
Is it Anastasia? And talk about,
I guess so. It felt a little Russian propaganda-y at times.
Who's funding
this? And then the little girl, her story track ran into this story of a man who's like the Grinch, essentially, whose heart is cold because of Christmas. But
did he grow many sizes?
He found out that his wife died in childbirth and that his son had disabilities.
What?
And he gave the son up. And then they revisit. I mean, I was like, I turned to Garrett. I'm like, okay, we got to get out of here after this. Because then I'm like, are we getting into like some sort of like political messaging situation? That's not playing out on the stage. It's playing out on the screens.
I thought
in between
they were just
the
ripping through these Christmas tunes.
Yeah, and then they get out there and they just like start. And now I will say there were some incredible singers out there. Like these, some of these women were just like.
Belting
Christina Aguilera-esque. Mm-hmm, you're like, like I stood up and I gave a standing ovation.
GJ-SO?
We were just like, but then like, it was crazy. The lasers, we were on the floor. There was foam at one point that was snow. It was a little cringy. I had to cover my beer because I didn't want my beer to get ruined.
Yeah.
I think some people's food got ruined. Whatever. It was wild. People were rocking out. I kept hearing this one guy behind me, let's go. Like, you know, people were standing up and cheering. Like, I felt like I was at a rock concert, but then it also intermixed with like Sunday contemporary service at a mega church. You know
weird,
what I mean? Like,
weird.
So I was like, this is interesting.
So strange to me.
I didn't pregame enough for the event, obviously.
Yeah.
Because you're spending $11 on a single beer. Which I was like, okay, enough of that. We did find street parking, though.
Which is a real Christmas miracle. Is exactly what I'm getting at.
It's like right
13th
there.
Day of Christmas, you find a parking spot at Colonial Life.
Parking space all to me.
Yeah, that's right. That's the least known 13th day of Christmas.
I think the last time I went to Colonial Life was with you. We went and saw men's basketball. Men's basketball. We got on the Jumbotron not once, but twice.
Twice, baby.
Because one of our friends was working the camera on the court. He would turn around and get us.
And
the second time, because we got a photo of it, our friend Joey Craney snapped that photo.
I handed him my phone and I said, take a picture of the Jumbotron in a second. And then,
hey, kid, take a picture of the Jumbotron.
And then it popped up there and he was like, what? How did you know that?
And do we both have sunglasses on?
Yeah.
And the guy behind us couldn't stand us. And he was making a very
rude gestures at us. Yeah.
He's like,
especially the second time. The second time he was being very rude.
We were living like kings at that game.
Oh, Siberian. That's why it was Russian.
Oh.
Siberian.
I guess so.
My question is, do you think there are multiple Trans-Siberian orchestras that are playing in different cities?
I don't know, because I was looking at their list of where they're at and where they're going to be on
all
Christmas
Eve. All
over
the place, right?
So, I mean, unless they're jetting around, I don't know.
There has to be, like, three sets of them, right?
I think you could. It was fascinating. They all had, like, all the guys with their, like, electric Slayer guitars, like, had their long hair, and, like, some of them had their skinny leather pants, and I'm like, oh, man, like, these guys.
They're selling a look.
They survived, like, the 90s, and they're just riding the wave now in retirement. Doing a couple shreds, jumping around, nothing too stressful in the joints, you know,
truly,
enough.
As someone who went to school for music, like, a reliable gig is something that you cannot look down your nose at.
And that's high quality. I mean, I'm not lying. Like, the production value was there. The music was solid. Like, I'm not poo-pooing that because that is, like, legit. They could be easily stuck in some dive somewhere playing the same.
Well, we got to get you some heavier shows next, Gavin. We got to ramp
up. That's next year. That could be something
that's hot
for next year.
I would have loved for you to tell me that you got it. There was a pit, you know? You got to come to a heavy metal show with me. We'll have our hots and knots.
Yeah, find us in the pit, guys.
Yeah, but don't. Hey. Don't windmill kick me in the pit, okay?
Guys,
it gets serious in there. Stay away. Anyway, people, if you're in the pit, call us.
Have you been in a mosh pit?
Hell yeah. In middle school.
Let me get a hell yeah.
Can I get a hell yeah? Anyway, people, call us in. Give me a hell
yeah. Get in the pit. Get in the pit with us.
There we go. Welcome Gavin, go hit the outro.
Welcome to the pit. Oh, well, folks, give us a shout. We need to know your hot or nots for 2025. I cannot stress this enough. Let us know what we have to look forward to in the new year, 803-563-7169. Maybe you have seen Trans-Siberian Orchestra or are going to this holiday season. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And you can always stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
When I think Christmas, I'm thinking tacos. Straight up.
You don't have one of these, do you?